Welcome to a special series of CAG podcasts coming to you from Starbase Indy, November 24th through the 26th, 2017. The Klingon Assault Group, along with the Klingon Language Institute, sponsored several panels this weekend. This first one is Klingon Science Through the Lens of Language, with presenters Alan Anderson and Chris Lipscomb.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Klingon Riv Show, Klingon Embassy. All of the Klingon-related programming is going to be in this room for the weekend. And we're going to begin with an exploration of what we know about Klingon science based on what we know in the vocabulary of the Klingon language. We have a pair of Klingon languages. One is Klingonase, which means, I'll get to that in a next slide. And the other is Klingonhol. Both of them get translated as Klingon. So Klingonase comes from the book The Final Reflection by John Ford. This book was published almost exactly the same time as the movie Star Trek III came out. So this does not reflect anything we know about the Klingons from the movies, with the slight exception of the first few minutes of Star Trek The Motion Picture, where all it is a couple of guys on the bridge of one of the Klingon ships talking in what at the time didn't sound like anything normal, with subtitles. So John Ford decided to make pieces of a language to reflect that. And Klingonase is analyzed in his book as Klin, meaning the idea of honorable existence, what it is to be a Klingon. Gan, which is a piece of the language that means that which makes it that, the embodiment of. And ase is a suffix that refers to tools, something for manipulating. So Klingonase is the tool for manipulating the Klin principle. It's actually said that way in the book when someone is explaining what the Klingon language is all about. We also have Klingonhol, which was invented by Mark Okrand for the third Star Trek movie. And he put enough work into making the dialogue for the movie that he convinced the people at Paramount and Pocket Books to publish it as a dictionary. So this is the second edition of the Klingon Dictionary. It has a small addendum in the back with a set of vocabulary that was added after the original publication in 1985. I do have a copy of the original one, and it's in nice. It is not printed on acid-free paper, so I don't get that book out very often. But in that language, Klingonhol just means the Klingon language. In the introduction to The Final Reflection, which is ostensibly most of it written by a character in the story, it's supposed to be his journal, he talks about the Italian proverb traduttori traditore, which means the translator is a traitor. And he's talking about how he managed to give English equivalents, or Federation standard equivalents, to some of the terms that he would otherwise be using that no one would understand. So he's talked about the actual Klingonase words for warp drive and transporter and the disruptor pistol. And in his explanation of what those mean, we get a hint as to what the state of Klingon science might be. So one of my favorite words is the anti-curve writer. That's the Klingonase term for warp drive. What could that possibly mean? I'm thinking that according to the Klingon encyclopedia, sorry, the Star Trek encyclopedia, and talking about how warp drive works, It's extending a warp field into deeper levels of subspace and using it to push on subspace. But talking about an anti-curve rider, maybe Klingon science sees it as reaching around to the other side of the boundary between regular space and subspace. Not a lot to go on, but if you go anti, maybe that's what they're talking about. And the transporter, literally a particle displacer. When we talk about a Federation transporter, it's always described as converting something, converting matter into energy, and sending it somewhere else and reassembling it back into matter. But if you're talking about displacing a particle, it was that if people know about wormholes, you're a fan of Star Trek, they use those for getting from place to place. So maybe a Klingon transporter is more of a wormhole effect, or a real life thing, quantum tunneling. A particle can appear on the other side of a normally insurmountable barrier for no other reason than probability. So maybe Klingon transporters induce something like that. The description of a transporter in The Final Reflection actually talks about disassembling something, sending it, and reassembling it. So maybe it is similar to Federation transporters. The difference might be how it gets the particles from one place to another. And something else, in one of the episodes of Star Trek, the original series, Day of the Dove, you see a bunch of Klingons materialize using their transporter, and there is no sound. It is a completely silent system. Federation transporters are noisy. They're not very good for stealth. And a word that a lot of people seem to like, the Vird Dakase, which literally means a shake it till it falls apart tool. The typical Klingon weapon that we see in the original series is a disruptor pistol. And because it was an adaptation of the prop that was used in A Taste of Armageddon, the guards on Iminiar 7 use a sonic disruptor that looks almost exactly like a Klingon disruptor. The emitter end is a little different. So the assumption is that a Klingon disruptor uses the same principle because it looks almost identical, and it uses focused sound waves to basically shake something until it falls apart, breaking the mechanical bonds or chemical bonds. This is not like a Federation phaser, which uses some technobabble called a rapid nadion effect, or nadion. It uses some sort of subatomic particle to mess with things. Don't know exactly how those are supposed to work. There is another Klingon disruptor. A sound-based weapon, like a sonic disruptor, would not be very useful on a ship, because space doesn't carry sound. Okay, you hear ships go by going whoosh, but in a vacuum, a sonic disruptor wouldn't really do anything. In The Final Reflection, they mention the fact that the two different weapons have the same name because they both induce vibrations in their target, but the big ship-mounted disruptor cannons do something with suppressing the nuclear charge on a proton, and you do that quickly enough and whatever you're pointing it at comes apart. And they decide that it is actually to their advantage for people to be confused, for their enemies not to recognize that the two names, or the two technologies with the same name are actually completely different. That keeps them from being ready to defend against one of them. Anybody here familiar with the Klingonase supplements for a very old role-playing game? Do you have any comments or insights into how the FASA games dealt with Klingon science?
They didn't very much, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Don't recall seeing much about science.
Yeah, all I know of Klingonase comes from the book, The Final Reflection. So we get to the vocabulary of Klingon Hol. You've got your standard, what I'm calling low-tech weapons. Yeah, things like an Ek, a Taj, Jek Kij, Moit Bit. Ha! Got some knives back there. One thing that doesn't appear in the vocabulary is a bow and arrow. They've got something that's equivalent. The Chet Vit is a kind of an axolotl, if you know what those are. Not axolotl. Atlatl? Atlatl.
There's a guy who brought one to a convention.
Yeah. It's like a really long stick with a cup on the end that you stick a spear in and fling it to get an extended throwing arm. And that's the state of low-tech Klingon weapons science. They've got names for a bunch of different swords and knives. The typical Daktar. There's one back there. Kutluch, assassin's knife, you got that. Yay. There's also a Taj Tik. You don't have any of those. And I don't even know how to pronounce Mekalak. Yep, and Obmak, an axe. And the standard Betlech. Okay, the half axe, half Betlech. Yeah. But, it's all simple stuff. With the exception of no bow and arrow, it could be any Federation technology. Go to the high-tech weapons, and the big one is the disruptor. So obviously, Klingon science has some way of dealing with sound and focusing it really well. And they have words for a handgun, a pistol, a rifle, a cannon. They also have words for phaser and an explosive, a jorwe, literally thing which explodes. And then a torpedo. The plural of torpedoes is its own word. But nothing really unusual if you watch Star Trek. Got a bunch of words for various propulsion mechanisms. Chuidach. At the time that word was first presented in the Klingon dictionary, it didn't you couldn't really analyze it. Dach learned that chui means to sneeze. So thrusters are like a sneeze array. But the Klingon vocabulary speaks of impulse power and impulse drive and warp drive, and they have nacelles and specific names for attitude control thrusters and the takeoff and landing thrusters. No big surprise. You can't really say that Klingon science has any fancy pieces here. I mean, they don't talk about using repulsor drives that you see in some science fiction books or inertialess. I don't think there is. Gonna have to work on that one. We do have a word for klam, gravity, and klam neb, artificial gravity. But the vocabulary of Klingon Hol has words for basically anything that you'd see in a Federation ship. Their engines use dilithium and antimatter. And they have a word for a transtator, which we know little about anyway, but apparently Federation starships and Federation technology is based on them. So apparently either Klingon technology has something similar, or they just like to talk about Federation technology.
Well, so when did Klingons get all this technology?
That's a really good question. Yeah, we don't know anything based on the vocabulary. We know fan theories. And we know in-universe history of the Herc, but we don't really know anything about how they got all this.
But we do know that they got the Klingon cloaking device sooner than they we used to think they did. Spoilers.
Maybe. Maybe. Maybe it's not the same thing.
Maybe.
But there is chemistry. We have all sorts of words that are typical for Federation science. I don't think we have a word in any of the Klingon languages for a Bose-Einstein condensate. I'm going to have to see if I can...
Oh, I'll bring you the word
Bose-Einstein. Yeah. get a message through to Maltz and see
Maltz
if he...
Maltz is a scientist.
No, he's not. He might have friends.
All the scientific terms for someone who's not a scientist.
Yeah, well, like atom and molecule, everybody
right.
knows that. And, well, we've
got... But it wouldn't have been named after Bose and Einstein.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Planck time in the Klingon vocabulary, the shortest amount of time that actually means anything, is just the photon time in Klingon Hol. But... Okay, there are words for speaking of quantum physics. That's kind of neat. Oh, and I did not put down the words for Evnach subspace. Nope. Klingon science has subspace, or at least the Klingon vocabulary does. And since there is a word for biology, okay, we're going to assume that Klingons treat biology as a thing, as a science. The only odd thing, well, we've got Nuchher for aspirin. Literally, coward's medicine. And everything else here, except for the Brak Lul, the redundancy in Klingon body parts, all corresponds really well with what we'd see on a Federation starship or starbase or wherever we've seen Federation medicine used. Ah, we do have the laser scalpel, the Udhaktaj. Yes, Petcod. We've seen Dr. McCoy use a bone knitter in his sick bay. It's obviously a similar thing. I don't think Klingon bones are anything really different than other species' bones. The one thing that's new and different on this list of words, we've got scanners, and they actually have a thing they call a tricorder, and they make a distinction between deflectors and shields. Go back to the low-tech weaponry, there's a different word, yod, which means the physical shield that you hold on your arm. But, we've got force fields and a thing called a communicator, but we've got the cloaking device. So Klingon science has cloaks. Federation science didn't for a long time. So they were more advanced in that way. Yeah, the terminology used for them in Discovery, they did not call them cloaking devices. They called them just a way to make a ship completely transparent. And they didn't have that fancy name for them. But, yeah.
He was the assistant to Robin.
The transporter vocabulary, they don't talk about the transporter itself, they talk about the transport beam. The Jol is the beam. It also is the verb meaning to beam someone. And the transporter room is the transporter beam room. One small discrepancy, I'm not sure whether it's an error in the Klingon dictionary or whether it hints at something different between Klingon and Federation transporters, but there is a word for the transporter ionizer unit in the Klingon dictionary. One of the words that you look at and say, why would you have a word for that? But in the Star Trek episode where something like that was mentioned, well, it's the transporter unit ionizer. So either it hints that there's a difference between Federation and a Klingon transporter, or someone got it wrong. Maybe Scotty messed up the line. So basically, Klingon Aze, as John Ford portrays it, shows a level of Klingon science that's roughly the same as Federation science, but the terms for things are just different enough that it hints that maybe there's a little bit of underlying difference in how they understand the concepts. On the other hand, Klingon Hol, as it came out in the movies and based on the scripts written for Paramount, it's pretty much indistinguishable from Federation science, and that's kind of disappointing. You get a lot more imagination in their mangling of other sciences in Federation terms than you get as an insight into differences in science between different species. I think we've reached the end of my presentation. Does anybody have any comments, any further insights, questions? Yes, sir.
It would seem that if one assumes that the laws of physics are constant throughout the universe, that the physics of Klingon versus Federation would be nearly identical. The areas of difference that I would think one would expect to see is biology, technology, and the ways of studying the science.
That's probably a reasonable observation. You do find that even if the laws of physics are the same, there are certain technologies that are developed earlier or later in different cultures. Discovering warp fields and subspace. You do that, and all of a sudden, a lot of other things become possible. There's a novel about a culture who invented the transporter so early in their history that it is a ubiquitous part of everything they do. And it completely changes the way they approach certain problems of science. You can study things absolutely differently if you can reach in and pull out a piece of it rather than having to slice through from the outside. Yes?
I apologize if this question was already answered. I missed the first few minutes. Do the Klingons have a separate term or a term for the scientific method?
There is a word, mek, which means reason or logic. That's about as close as you get. They have a word for science, ked. There is also a word, tej, for scientist. They do not necessarily have a word for the scientific method, unless you're going to call it Ked Mu, the way of science, which is basically what the scientific method is. I don't think we've ever seen anything in a story where they talk about how they study a problem, how they find answers.
Yeah, I somehow I doubt Klingons have developed their own scientific method. That seems unlikely.
Yeah. We do see in an episode or two, there are Klingon scientists, and they're not held in very high regard.
It didn't seem like Antek was following much of a scientific method when he was doing his testing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just try it on this guy. Oh, it didn't work. Let's try it on this guy. Oh, it worked. Yay.
Yeah. Anyone else? Yes, again.
Is there within the either of the languages that have been developed an organization of grammar structure that would allow the creation of new words to fit situations that are not covered in the current language?
Klingon Aze seems to be very agglutinative. You toss particles together and make new words. The word Klingon Aze, the tool to manipulate Klingonness, whatever that means. And the Virtakase is also, it's got the Aze ending for tool. So it seems to work an awful lot like Esperanto, where you can plug words together to make new meanings. German does the same sort of thing. Klingon-Hol is also similar in that you can just put a noun here and say, Klingon-Hol, the language of Klingons. The grammar of Klingon is pretty strict. You can't really smash verbs together to make new concepts, but it's relatively easy to come up with a long description to talk about something else. Those of us who study Klingon as a language and speak it, we are under the fantasy that it is a real language about which we have imperfect information. We just study it, we don't make it. So we're not going to create new words to mean something that we don't have a word for. For instance, quantum physics. We had to wait until we got official word from, in our fantasy, the Klingon in Mark Okrand's basement, who somehow has communication with the Klingon homeworld, to find out, okay, it's just photon science. That's the equivalent in Klingon of quantum physics.
Is there any indication in the Klingon language? I know that the Klingons have a lot of subject races. Is there any indication of loanwords from those subject races?
Absolutely. For instance, the word for audacity, chutzpah, kajunpak, is actually a loanword from some subjugated planet, meaning fiery lava. We have explanations of that. I'm trying to remember another example. One of the words for a piece of clothing, a type of jacket associated with the people of this region. In that region, it just means jacket. Any jacket. Everywhere else, it means a jacket from there. Yes?
Sorry. It's okay if I step out of the fantasy a little bit.
Please do.
Miguel mentioned that you had something to do with the discovery.
Yes.
Episodes. Can you tell us?
Okay. A couple of years ago, when the people who were going to be creating Star Trek Discovery thought about how they wanted to represent the Klingons, because they knew that Klingons were going to be a big part of it, at some point they decided they're going to have the Klingons all speaking Klingon. They're not going to do a Hunt for Red October thing where they start out speaking Klingon and all of a sudden magically you hear them in English. They're going to do subtitled Klingon. And they wanted to do it right. They asked around, who could do this? Who could help us? Who could put in enough time and effort and be there for us to make this the best it can be? Since they were doing the production in Canada, they wanted a Canadian. Fortunately, one of the best Klingon speakers in the known universe is a Canadian, and they managed to get her to agree to do this. The original schedule was for it to be filmed mostly during the fall and winter. And since her day job as an aerial survey pilot doesn't have a lot of busy time outside her regular job to work on this, when the schedule slipped and they started doing filming in the spring and summer, when all of a sudden she has literal day job because there's a lot more day, it was starting to be to the point where she didn't have the time that she could commit for urgent requests. There were going to be some times where she was actually going to be in the air flying for many hours when people on the set needed an answer to something quickly. And she suggested me as her backup. So I was brought in for about the last half of the episodes to go over her scripts, go over her translations, give suggestions, and when necessary, do the primary translation for an episode or two. And I was on call for things that they needed an answer to immediately. About a month ago, they were essentially done, but they were going to be reshooting pieces of one scene, and then they added another scene after that. The actress, Mary Chifo, who does, you know, she plays Laurel. She was going to be flying cross-country from a presentation she had given back to where the studio was, and she wanted to have the lines to this new scene to review on the flight. So basically, you have 2 hours to translate a page and a half, because she had a really long monologue, and record it, because what we provide to the, there's an on-set dialogue coach, and she has an assistant. But what we provide to her is the translated lines and an audio recording. For almost all of the actors, the recording is in the form, the line in Klingon, the line spoken slowly in Klingon, and then the line spoken really distinctly, slowly, syllable by syllable, each sound emphasized. And then once again at normal speed. There was one actor who did not want to have it that way. He just wanted, you know, three times normal speed so that he could just listen to it and parroted it back. And that actually shows in his performance. You can tell that he's not speaking exactly the same dialect as everyone else, which is actually fine because it's intentional that he has a different dialect. But, you know, just worked out that way that, yeah, okay, it came out because of the way he wanted to speak. Since all of the filming has been done for all of the episodes, they're just doing post-production for the last three or four of them right now. So I might be asked to go over some of the results of that. I haven't been involved in what they call the additional dialogue recording, ADR, and matching things up with subtitles. But, you know, if something comes up and they need something done on that quickly.
As a follow-up, out of curiosity, how did they, the Star Trek member, how did they know her and she know you, and how did that
be? Gosh, it was almost 22 years ago when I went to my first Klingon language conference. I'm a member of the Klingon Language Institute. That's the symbol here. Yeah. Matching. And that was started in approximately 1992. And somehow a bunch of people who weren't necessarily extreme Star Trek fans, more Star Trek fans but language fans too, managed to find each other and come together in this organization to study and promote the Klingon language. And there have been annual conferences, meetings since, I think the first one would have been in 1994. 93 would have been the Klingon language camp that was done in Minnesota somewhere by a group. And basically every year, at least a dozen, sometimes as many as 40 people have come together for several days of learning and speaking and playing games and singing and all sorts of stuff in the Klingon language. And that first one that I went to, Robin Stewart was also there. So that's when I met almost everybody that I know from the Klingon Language Institute. Later, more people have come on. Jen is a member. Chris, who was wandering around here giving a little bit of insight. He's one of the members. But the Star Trek Discovery people asked the Klingon Language Institute, because CBS knows of this organization. We've actually had a license to do Klingon from Paramount. Things got a little screwy when Paramount and CBS split up. So the status of that is a little nebulous and is internationally recognized as one of the best Klingon speakers in the world. And she said yes. And she and I and another handful of people are core members of the KLI. So she knows that I'm capable of the kind of work that they needed. So when they needed someone else, I'm who she suggested.
Next year, the KLI will be
Yeah, right across the highway at the Hyatt place.
It's 3 days of just brain bending fun. Like, it really hurts your brain, but in a good way.
Yeah.
My first year was very overwhelming.
Yeah, if any of you are interested in learning Klingon or associating with people who are learning Klingon, you can go to the KLI's website, kli.org. Got all the information for our conference next summer and pointers to all sorts of resources for learning the language. And
the LCP Press is excellent.
Yes. Yeah, we have a Klingon language certification program. Level one is a core vocabulary and a lot of the grammar, and that's what the online course will prepare you to pass. Level two is, most of the rest of the vocabulary and lots of the grammar. Yeah. The second test is everything in the Klingon Dictionary. And level three is everything in the Klingon Dictionary and Klingon for the Galactic Traveler and all of the words revealed since then and all of the new pieces of grammar since then and idioms and similes and, everything. So if at that level, you know everything. And now I think we're done, right?
Just as I get back.
Yep. Well, thank you all.